You're listening to Four Seas, One Family, Perspectives, Episode 2. Welcome to Four Seas, One Family, the podcast where expats, immigrants, and migrants can share and learn about life experiences abroad. I'm your host, James Thomas, coming to you from Taipei, Taiwan, and I'm so glad to have you traveling along with me on this journey, and welcome to the show. No one has a total grip on events in their life that will direct them to the goals they forecast and hope to later achieve. Sometimes being at the right place at the right time can be a blind gift that points a person in directions he or she may never have dreamt of. This episode, I'm happy to sit down in the Taipei studio with someone who was originally based in Korea and trained as a U.S. military linguist, who eventually followed his broadcasting aspirations at ICRT, a popular radio station in Taiwan, which allowed him to not only become a well-known public figure, but also a local media standout. We welcome this episode a native of Texas, Rick Monday. Now, Rick is an emerging playwright and broadcaster who has been recognized and awarded for his contribution to radio broadcasting in his adopted home. Join us as we follow Rick down memory lane while at the same time taking a peek into his thoughts concerning the power and influence of the media. So without any further ado, let's listen to the interview.
Hey, how you doing, Rick? Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming down to the studio, dude.
Very happy. Returning the favor because James starred in my short film that I turned in for my MFA in screenwriting project. And because of that, I graduated with honors. And graduating with honors means that I was able to send two scripts to the institute that I studied at sent two scripts around to Hollywood for me, and that's only for honor students. So thank you very much for participating in my project, Uncle Buddy.
Well, thank you for having me in the show. You know, Rick, you know, you're so talented, and you do all kinds of things here, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. How did you get out here in Taiwan, man? First of all,
I was brought to Taiwan to work at ICRT Radio, International Community Radio, Taipei, I guess is the T stands
back
for.
In the day, huh?
In 1984, and that was still during martial law. And ICRT is the successor of the very popular AFRNT, I guess it was, Armed Forces Radio, Taiwan, which had a huge audience, which gave Taiwanese the habit of listening to English language radio. And English language radio has never taken off in Hong Kong. It hasn't taken off in Bangkok. Those are places where they tried to imitate ICRT's success in the 1980s and 90s, and they failed just because people weren't used to listening to English language radio. Well, the Armed Forces Radio crew had to leave in 1979 when Jimmy Carter cut relations with Taiwan to recognize China, and then this entity of ICRT was opened up by the American Chamber of Commerce, and it failed twice because it had volunteer announcers. They were just boring, and nobody was listening. So they brought over this genius general manager named Craig Quick from Hawaii, and Craig brought over some other people, but they were still having announcers that were brought over and quit because during martial law, we were up on a mountain. We were on Yamingshan at the old Armed Forces station, and you had to live there. You had to live up. I mean, they didn't force you to, but it was just the traffic was difficult, and so the only way to make sure you could get to work was to live on that mountain. They had announcers with much more ability than I did come and actually quit within two or three shows and just said, I just can't stand it.
But why did they quit then? Why?
On the mountain.
They just two going up to the Yang Dada, I forgot the name of that place.
And only two restaurants. You know, there was no McDonald's at that point.
Probably a lucky thing.
It was two. You're taking just somebody from an American culture and putting them in too much of a Taiwanese culture at that time. It was too much of a clash. So then they decided that they were going to look for announcers who had worked in radio, But you also had to have lived in Asia because they did not want that cultural conflict anymore. So I was in the army in Korea and finishing up, and I saw this opportunity. So I paid my own way to come here, and I interviewed with Craig Quick, Tony Taylor, and Lan Roberts, and I got the job. Lan Roberts, if you'll look him up, Google him, he worked at KJR in Seattle. And he was one of the big radio announcers. And Tony Taylor, after I did the interview, and I was willing to do news. I had done promotions. I looked like a good fill-in guy to be at this radio station as a jack-of-all-trades guy. And so Tony, the first thing he said was, "Hey, you like cold beer?" And so he took me to the American Club, and he says, "So what do you think? What do you think?" He goes, "I got to be honest. We've had some guys that they just couldn't hang here. You seem like, you know, you seem interested."
Right.
And I said, "Man, I really missed radio, and Craig seems like a guy that's got this great vision." I said, "My only complaint was, of all the names that announcer could have chosen, why did he choose Lan Roberts when Lan Roberts is a radio legend? I studied him in a textbook when I was in radio school."
Cool.
And he goes, "You big Texas dummy." The first of hundreds of times Tony would say that. He goes, "That was Lan Roberts."
Huh.
And so Lan was such a big guy that later on, one of his fans in Washington State found out that he was working in Taiwan, that guy flew to Taipei and asked to be a part-time employee at ICRT just so that he could say he worked at the station where Lan Roberts worked at.
You know, most people have a story about, "Oh, before I came someplace overseas, I had to do this kind of research and stuff like that." But you were just in the area, the military kind of like got you used to the environment here where most people just can't hang. Most Westerners, they come out here, they get a heart attack because, you know, the conveniences are a little bit different. So you had a little bit of easy sliding approach right into the culture here in Taiwan. Did you have any difficulties when you got out here? Like what things shocked you? I mean, it has to be something different. Of course, you know, I lived in Korea too. I mean, what was the difference though?
Well, it was martial law at that time.
Yeah.
And so everything was illegal except what wasn't. And it just wasn't written down. Yeah. I got over it because I was restricted up on that mountain at that radio station. And so, ICRT at that time, we had a million audience, million listeners, Taiwanese. The foreigners were never counted in the surveys at any time. And so I just got over it by throwing myself into the work. I was given a new shift. I was a relief guy on weekends. We had this fabulously popular Haitian announcer named Patrick Steele. Mm. And so he needed a night off one day a week. So I filled in for him. And then I would sleep, go home. He worked from midnight to six. And then I would go home and sleep and then be back on at 2 o'clock as a newsreader.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the only employee who could kind of do that swing shift. But I grew up working in radio in the United States. And I was always friends with the sales director. I've always been fascinated with radio in terms of the creativity and the commercials and the raising of money. And so then I was also able to work with the sales department and a guy named Fred Goforth, who was very organized, and he was Craig Quick's, the general manager's right-hand man. So Fred Goforth and I, we did the first high school basketball tournament in Taiwan, and now high school basketball is so big it's on television on the Fox Sports network. But we were the first guys to ever introduce high school basketball to Taiwan. So I didn't have those cultural problems. My mother was an officer in the army, and she had lived in Japan, so we had rice every meal.
Nice.
even in Texas. I grew up on a military base, Fort Hood, Texas. So I had friends that were from Vietnam, that were from Korea, that were from Japan. So I didn't grow up in this either. It was Hispanic, white, or African American neighborhood in the United States. You know, we had Samoans, we had everybody. So I didn't have so much of a culture clash. But my biggest regret is that I only thought I was going to stay 2 years. I was offered a 2-year contract, and if I knew that I was still going to be here 34 years later, I would have jumped into Chinese school the first day. I was trained as a Russian linguist in the Army, and then they sent me to Korea, where everybody else had gone through the Defense Language Institute out of Monterey, and in South in Korean language, so they could all speak it. And I saw the importance of it being able to interact with the locals. And that's one of the reasons I was looking to get out and to come to Taiwan. Is just I had Russian language, and everybody else had Korean language training, and I just couldn't fit in there. But if I had to do it over, I from day one, I would have just started, you know, trying to speak Chinese.
What type of things that you, while here in Taiwan, you discovered that kind of like taught you more about yourself or maybe about other people, besides the point of we all look different and smell different, whatever. What has it taught about you? What has it taught you?
That I was the outsider.
Waigoren,
right? You know, the point. And even now, you know, I see somebody who's, I've been here 34 years. So if I see somebody who's in their 20s and they call me a foreigner, I go, look, dude, I've been here 10 years longer than you have. So how the heck am I the foreigner?
You know, way before you were born, right?
But I got really active in Taiwan. I got involved in the community service center in Tin Mu, who they were raising charity. I really, you'll hear this word charity come from me a lot, because that U.S. radio stations, you have to keep your license in order to keep broadcasting. And in order to keep that license, you had to prove that you were helping the community. And so that's usually why on Sunday mornings you'll have a religious show. That's part of their community service, but then they also have some kind of fundraising that they do. So I jumped into that. And I also went to Graham, come to Graham, learn English. That was the big English school here. And I walked in the door and said, I'd like to have one class. You know, I can't sign on because as a full-time teacher, but I'd like to be involved and learn how to teach English. So I got this wonderful class of ladies, Taiwanese ladies, all married. They were just doing English as a part-time job, and they became great friends, and they introduced me to the Brother Hotel and some of the different, you know, places to eat. So I had a pretty full life. I wasn't really so much as an outsider. There was one bus down from that mountain. You had to just take the bus down, and then from there, I took another bus downtown. So it was, you know, my life was pretty simple in terms of transportation wise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think I was here 6 years before I bought a motorcycle. You know, I had never.
What kind of motorcycle you had? Now I got to know this.
Just one of the blue locals ones, you know.
The one that building out all those smokes.
Yeah, right, right. All that. My mother had never allowed me to ride a motorcycle in Texas, so I had never ridden a motorcycle. So I had to kind of learn how to do that. So I'm a bad motorcycle rider. I'm a guy that rides on the, you know, very right hand side of the road and goes slow. You know, if I'm not going to run into anybody else, they're going to have to hit me, I think, is my rule of motorcycle riding. But once I had a motorcycle, then I could ride down, because the mountain is about 45 minutes away, you know, if you with traffic. So, but once I had that motorcycle, then I had the freedom to come down the mountain. Because in Tin Mu, which was where the expat community was at that time, there was pancakes and there was pizza. An interesting part of the culture at that time is Taiwanese grew up believing that they were lactose intolerant. Mm. And therefore, if they smelled cheese, they would vomit, you know. And there was a Mormon missionary here named Scott Olkers.
And
he knew that wasn't true. So he used ICRT to promote Domino's Pizza. So Domino's Pizza was the first pizza place there must have been pizza for Americans at the American Club, you know, these restricted places, and on the base, the military base at the time, there must have been pizza, but Taiwanese did not eat it. So Scott Olkers came on speaking Mandarin and Taiwanese, and he had one phone number. You called in, and then they sent you pizza on the back of a motorcycle, which now everybody uses.
Everybody does it. But
that was all Scott's pioneering, and he used us at ICRT to open the trends. Taiwanese at that time, if you said, would you like coffee? And they would say, oh, we don't drink coffee, we drink tea. Foreigners drink coffee, but the aforementioned Patrick Steele, he had that Midnight to Six show. students were listening to that. So we were trying to get students to start drinking coffee for their grades. So we introduced the Nescafe 3-in-1, which is really just sugar.
Okay.
And we actually, but they paid for that. They paid for his show. That was the first midnight to six broadcast in Taiwan's history. And then, it became the first sponsored show. So that was, you know, this was like pioneering radio, you know. And I tried to go back to that figure of 1 million listeners. Whereas if I had stayed in the United States and become a radio announcer, I probably would have been happy with an audience of maybe 50,000. You know, that's large. You know, even in Seattle, KJR, Lan Roberts never had the audience the size that he had in Taiwan. So for that, we all had to be thankful. And when we would go down the street, people would recognize us and just say thank you. Because during martial law, Chinese news was censored. And and the opposition political party, the DPP, they were not allowed to be interviewed. ICRT talked to them. We didn't talk to them about political issues, but we talked to them about they were trying to be represented in the local elections. Mm-hmm. We could have been shut down by the government, and they decided that no, it was good that ICRT was giving this uncensored news to the world. And so for educated Taiwanese, they appreciated that. And for students who were learning English as grammar, and so they just couldn't understand how we speak because there were so many grammar rules, to be listening to this radio station that was playing popular music. And you say, well, what about the Americans? The American radio station had a lot of propaganda, and it was targeting soldiers. It wasn't targeting Taiwanese, and it did not have the newest hits that we had. So we were playing the latest hits with cool sponsors, new products, pizza, and this Nescafe. We were targeting students, and we're just trying to say, just open your mouth and talk. You know, we were essentially a part of the Ministry of Education saying, learn English. It's not that difficult.
Are you thinking about or currently living overseas and have a story to share about your life abroad? Let your voice be heard right here at 4Cs One Family. Visit our contact page at 4CsOneFamily.com/contact. There, you can type out a comment or leave us a message via our SpeakPipe page. Share your experience to show that we have a lot more in common than we think. And thank you for listening to us here at 4Cs One Family.
Well, looking at it now at this time of date, how would you say then your time at ICRT in the interaction with the young kids at that age during martial law, especially or shortly after, how has it affected them from looking at it from today? Can you see any impressions from your day and how it's still carried on up to today?
I meet 50-year-olds all the time that'll say, are you Rick Monday? Maybe from me talking, and they say, I recognize your voice. Are you Rick Monday? And they go, oh, I can just remember, you know, listening to you and the others. You know, Lan Roberts, again, was the star of ICRT, and Tony Taylor, and I was just a jack-of-all-trades guy. But, you know, they just say, oh, I just so appreciated that what you guys did, because Taiwanese did not learn English in school. They learned grammar, and they made it so difficult. It was almost like math, that they could not think of what to say because there were so many rules. And so we made this English fun. And Armed Forces Radio did not take requests. That was a big part of our show, is that we put people on the air and they could hear, listen, I'm on the radio. That got all the way around town. So I just think people coming up and saying, wow, thank you for what you're doing, for just giving us free English. That's all they wanted, was the free English.
Well, tell me then, I mean, what did you do then, especially at that time when you got here, a little bit after you got, you know, settled down at the station, ICRT, what did you do to further, how would you say, integrate yourself within the culture? I mean, the language, I mean, you know, you speak Russian. How did you transfer from that training to learning about the culture here more in depth, because you're right here on the ground?
I learned more about Chinese culture in my English classes. And I would always tell those ladies, I say, I'm learning more from you. And they took me to these restaurants afterwards. You know, we'd come together. My first probably tea and the difference between pu'er tea and oolong tea and champagne tea, you know, that all came from these ladies. And the first 24-hour dim sum places, that were all of these, you know, these ladies. And then later on, maybe their husbands would want to come and meet me. Because they'd certainly, if the husband had no English at all, maybe he didn't listen to ICRT, but anybody else did. I mean, there was no internet, right? There were three TV stations. The Cosby Show was dubbed. The A-Team, I guess the Three's Company was a huge show here.
Was MacGyver on there?
MacGyver. Must have been, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but we were the source of English language news. And because the internet was not invented yet, our news was the news that was in tomorrow's newspaper.
Nice.
So we were so far ahead. So in a way, and Taiwanese are really generous. And so for them to say, we'd be glad to take you to dinner and talk with you and to practice our English if we can buy you a great meal, you know. And so then there was just, so that was sort of my life, was working. And I was volunteering at the Community Services Center. I had my one class at Graham English Center that was on Zhongshou and Dunhua. That at that time was a big main thoroughfare in Taipei. Our contract was we 5 days a week plus half a day on Saturday. And then my other half a day on Saturday when I was off, I was recording shows for the next of the week. So, I was really a radio guy. I was living the life, but I was living an expat life. I wasn't interacting with very many Taiwanese. And a lot of the guys here had Taiwanese girlfriends. I never did. So, therefore, a lot of the Western bankers, those were my dates, you know, so I kind of stood out on that front because I knew I was leaving in 2 years. Was just going to stay here. And the reason I stayed beyond that is George Herbert Walker, who actually died this afternoon as we're taping this, he was president. And that was the first kind of recession that the United States had. And so my mother told me, she says, there's not that many jobs here, and and you seem to be really happy there. She goes, go ahead and sign on for another 2 years. And then about 10 years later, after I'd been here 14 years, she goes, you know, I gave you permission to stay another 2 years, not to stay another 12 years. Right. You know, she goes, if I had known that you were going to stay there. But, you know, Taiwan, you know, the longer you stay, there's more reasons to stay here.
How have you seen because we did talk about the local community, how have you seen the expat or immigrant community change here or develop? How did you see that, especially through the eyes of the radio?
They left. You know, once China opened up, then a lot of the foreign companies, they moved their offices to China. But Taiwan, if you tried to track countries over the past 30 years, name countries that have improved. The U.S. has certainly declined in terms of its safety and the Iraq War, billions of dollars that couldn't go into infrastructure. Taiwan at that time, because of the factories, the air was black. And when it rained, your skin itched, you know, from the Maoyu or the small rain that would come down. There were dogs with mange walking around the streets. The traffic was horrendous. The Dam Shui River, which runs through town, was black. I remember seeing a dead hog, you know, laying in it. And people used to put their garbage in bags and then drive somewhere else and throw it, you know, in somebody else's yard. There wasn't the collection system. And ICRT, we did Green Day, but I can't, it wasn't us. I mean, we did a Earth Day, I guess it was, with Ford Motor Company. But Taiwanese just started saying, we don't want to live like this. And right. So they improved themselves. The mayors came in and started this garbage pickup and regulation. And so now the air is clean. The traffic situation, because of the mass transit situation, it's probably the first, second, or third best mass transportation system in the world.
Beautiful here. Yep.
You got Moscow, you got Tokyo, you got Taiwan. And yet the food is still wonderful, and the people are still extremely friendly. And now that I'm 60 years old,
get out of here.
The healthcare, You know, I think Cuba is rated number one, and Taiwan is rated number two in terms of healthcare. Americans, let's just say, when's the last time that you went to a dentist and you had an hour, you know, checkup where they checked every tooth and they gave you four or five X-rays? In Taiwan, that type of care will cost you $5, not $500, right. $5.
Right, that is so real.
The older you get, there's the more reasons that you wanted to live in Taiwan for the quality of life.
Well, how do you explain to friends and family back home, man, you've been at 34 years and still going strong. How do you explain to those guys, you know, how can they understand your reasons for staying over here so long? Because stuff, you know, you mentioned the healthcare system, and we can talk a little bit about that in a little bit. But how do you explain to them why you've been out here so long, Rick? How? What do you say?
Where I'm from in Texas, those guys would, the saying is, I ain't never lost anything in Taiwan. I don't reckon I need to go look for it.
Okay.
And so there are guys that are extremely proud that they've never left Texas. Because, you know, Texas has a long beach. So if you want to go surfing, you can go to South Padre. I guess if you want to go skiing, Texans actually think that Colorado is North Texas, so they can go up there. But for a long time, that pride of why wouldn't you come back? You're from Texas. They did not understand the reasons why I chose to stay here. One of my proudest moments was when I was able to take my friends out to a Chinese restaurant that was owned by Taiwanese, and I was able to order for them in Mandarin. And that's the first time they said, okay, so... it's not like in Killeen, even though we have a lot of Japanese and Koreans and Vietnamese, you actually are talking to the people in their language.
Right.
And I said, yeah. And if you can speak Mandarin, you get a much more delicious dish.
Yeah, you get that. Yeah, that's so true.
Than what you
Instead
guys are
doing. Instead of pointing at the little pictures there.
And so as I've stayed here longer and I've tried to post with these guys and talk to them about the healthcare situation and Taiwan's improvement, and as America, as the violence, you know, has happened, you know, because of guns. The question went from why are you there to, hey, can you get me a job? You know, I've
been hearing that too. Yes.
It seems like a really nice place just because of the violence. You know, I think when the last 2 weeks we had people walking into a Kroger and shooting mm-hmm. people. So when you can't even do, you know, basic errands in the United States for fear of being shot, then Taiwan, you say, man, 3 a.m. in the morning, Taiwan is safe. There are
yes.
there are no bad spots in the city. And anyone who has had a fight, I think they were the cause of it. You know, mm-hmm. if you stay out of trouble, then nobody's going to bother you. This is a country that's really big on education, and you see a lot of non-Taiwanese men with mixed blood children that just love raising their kids here, taking
right,
them to school,
right.
being involved. And now the trend is a lot of foreign women are
yes,
marrying Taiwanese
woman.
Husbands. So you see that. And then Taiwan, I guess besides Japan, Taiwan is the gay capital of Asia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. LGBT,
and
yeah.
I just know from my online writing classes, the last three semesters, I've had one writer in each of these classes, and there's only six. So what are the odds? Each of them had a Taiwan male partner. And
right.
they just said that Taiwanese male men, gay men, are known as fantastic husbands or whatever. So,
You interact with so many people, and you keep moving, and you are a prolific writer. You write scripts. You mentioned earlier, I was lucky enough, honored to be in one of your productions and stuff like that. Do you have any other, what is going on recently in that realm of your world?
I'm a government employee. I fought ICRT changed. They voted to go Shuangyu or bilingual, and that killed the audience. And so I was brought back in 2006, I think. And I came back and said, I would like to try to go back with the magic. I'd like to have an all English show. And I had an all English show, and I got all kinds. And I had Barack Obama, Senator Barack Obama, not president, but he, I was because the AIT Institute here backed me up, wrote to Obama's staff and said, at that time, there's a lot of punking, you know, on the radio. And so they backed up and said, if Rick submits a question, that's exactly what he'll ask. He won't change it anyway. Okay. So I had a pretty darn good English show. I still had a lot of contests. I had the mayor of Taichung, who decided that he was going to be my buddy. And so he actually brought us to Taichung, and we had the mayor on every morning for an hour.
Nice.
And so that was, you know, popular. So I ended up winning the best broadcaster award in Taiwan, and I'm the only foreigner who ever won that. English teachers, of course, have won it, but I was the first announcer who did that. And then ICRT flipped back to bilingual, even though they won this award for the government. So the government hired me. Nice. As I was trying to build in. So that's what I am now. I'm a government employee. I'm the English consultant for the Ministry of Transportation, but I also do an English roundtable with the Executive UN, which is the highest legislative body here on I'm not their teacher. Their English is better than mine is. They're all PhDs, but they just want to keep that English level up. So we sit around with a roundtable. And from that, then I have heard about Taiwan's initiative that they want to challenge Korea as a creative center. Mm. You know, Korean television, The Good Doctor, has made the transition. It was on Taiwan television and dubbed into Mandarin. Well, now it's being broadcast in the United States in English with a whole new cast. But that's the first time that an Asian TV show has made that jump. You have Korean movies that are in Taiwan theaters, other TV shows that Taiwanese go home. They don't miss. They watch them every night. There are Korean pop groups. So Taiwan has made this transition that if it's going to make itself known as a separate entity from China, they need to have some of that cultural success, I suppose it is.
You know, I brought you down here in particular to talk about the power of media and how you see the power of media, not only here in sweet old Taiwan and back in our home nation, but all the other places you traveled. And, you know, I really want you to talk a little bit more about the power of media and how it is used, sometimes pro and con, to influence people in sometimes inversive ways. This is something that you, with your experience, you can talk in depth about.
Well, we've never had a U.S. president, and referring to Donald Trump, whether you like him or dislike him, but there is no denying that the president of the United States tells falsehoods on a regular battle, and he has declared that people who challenge him are fake news. He has a news network, Fox News, who backs him up and says that if you disagree with the president, that you are promulgating fake news. Well, we're talking the era, what, 2 weeks after Jim Acosta's from CNN, Jim Acosta, I guess.
You got it.
We're speaking 2 weeks after Jim Acosta from CNN had his credentials taken away. And the other media, including Fox News, stood up and said, no, that's in the Constitution. So we're in the era now of news media in the United States fighting back and saying, no, we have a right to publish news. And let's just see if that trend goes around the world, where the news media can't come back and say, we're going to make up facts and accuse you of it. But in the United States, The Washington Post, The Atlantic Magazine, Politico, there's lots of organizations that are doing the research and are presenting the alternative truth of what's going on in the United States. And so that's the power of media, is that they are actually trying to say, we do deserve to exist. And if we don't exist, you're only going to have the government giving you that information, which goes almost back to the days of Stalin in the 1950s, when George Orwell's novel, right? So what the government says is right, and what anyone says against it is wrong. And so that's the position that the world is in at this point. So I think, in a way, you have to thank President Trump for that.
Yeah,
you know, okay. I mean, he caused this crisis, but I'm not so much anti-Donald Trump as I am more good journalism that's out there. Those guys need to have their access, because the United States got into the Iraq war with a lack. We believed President Bush so much, and we believe that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. If the media had been more tough at that time, and the books now prove that there was no link. If we had known that at that point and could have stopped that invasion and stopped those billions of dollars that we wasted, the United States would have better roads. We'd have a better railway system. That's what they're trying to talk about now with this Republican Congress, as an infrastructure bill that will take care of repairing the United States. Right. Taiwan, because it hasn't gone to war. Korea, because it hasn't gone to war. Japan, because it hasn't gone to war, are constantly rebuilding its infrastructure. And South Korea has... is it 4G or 5G?
Right.
When they build an apartment in the piping that goes into it, so it's free. So when you move in, the kid, when he's on his computer, he's doing, you know, high-level calculus.
Right.
And it doesn't cost him anything. But you can only do that when you're not putting so much money into your military. And then, of course, the other people are going to say, well, you've got to have the United States as the policeman, and that's the reason it spends so much money on the military. But if you would say, what is your difference? What are the difference between you now, having lived in Asia for 34 years, and when you first arrived? Because I came as a soldier. I'm much more peaceful,
right.
And I'm much more into investing in infrastructure and making people's lives better. Healthcare, you know, I'll go on and healthcare,
right.
Over and over is why living in Taiwan to me is a better deal than living in the United States.
You know, I don't want to take too much of your time, and I'm really honored to have you here in our studio here in Taipei. And yeah, I'm going to bring a question to you that I ask all my guests before we close. And basically, it comes down to this. If you could, you know, whisper in the ear of somebody who was in the same situation you are when you just got out of the military, or someone who is already living abroad and following, maybe thinking about following the route you have taken, what advice would you give to those people?
Learn Chinese. Start with Chinese. There's so much learning material now online. And there's a lot of it that is free, that you don't have to, you know, spend money to learn. Get interested in it, trying to get into the characters. And you say, oh, I don't want to live in Taiwan, I want to move to China. Then come to Taiwan, because there's a different writing system. And this is the traditional, this is the home now of traditional Chinese culture. And once you learn the traditional characters that Taiwan uses, you can go to China and you can easily to adapt if that's what you want to. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, over the 30 years, I've met lots of people that left Taiwan to go to China, and they came back and they just said, my lungs couldn't take the air, or I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't take the bad food, or I couldn't, the people, you know, it's when you have that many people scrambling for food and jobs and a way of life versus where Taiwan, where it's life is easier. They choose to live again in Taiwan. So, but my advice would be learn Chinese. It is a difficult language, but it's something that you will, a guy who hasn't mastered Chinese, but but knows plenty of guys who have, it's something that will be a lifetime hobby, you know, that you can always keep learning it, and you can get deeper into it. And once you do that, then you're going to develop real friendships with Chinese people, and then your life will really expand, you know. And then the other thing is, if you do marry a Taiwanese woman, then you can talk to her, and she can express to you, not in a second language, but what she really feels. And you can talk to her family, because you don't marry a Taiwanese woman, you marry her family. And so everybody has to understand you, and you get to make your point with it. But you know, Chinese is difficult, but it's not impossible. You know, I think the Russian grammar is much more difficult than Chinese. That would be it. Start studying Chinese. I don't say learn Chinese, but start studying Chinese. Right.
You know, Rick, thank you very much for stopping by here. And maybe we get you back on again, because you have a lot going on and a lot to show the world. And I have a feeling that we'll hear a lot more from you in the future. Take care, man.
Thank you very much.
Okay, zaijie. Once again, I would like to thank Rick Monday for taking the time out of his busy schedule
to come down to the studio and joining me here at Four Seas, One Family. If you are an expat, immigrant, or migrant, and have something on your mind that you would like us to cover here at Four Seas, One Family, please leave me a message at foursseasonefamily.com/contacts. There you can send a regular text message or leave a message via our SpeakPipe page. And please help us get the word out and help show the world that we have a lot more in common than we think. My name is James Thomas from Taipei, Taiwan. Looking forward to connecting with you one day. Take care and zaijian.